Bureau special meeting Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. Being called to order. We do have a quorum. Public comments relative to agenda items. Anyone from the public? Approval of minutes of November 23rd, 2020.
Move adoption.
Second. Battle.
Is there any additions, corrections, or? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, it passes. Four, consideration and potential action. DOT easement on Berlin Turnpike in Wethersfield.
Move adoption.
Is somebody here gonna talk on that? Any staff?
So you have Mike Curley.
I don't know if Mike's on still, Scott. Mr. Chairman, if I may, Chris Stone, I've been working on this with Alan King up in real estate for the last couple weeks or so, but DOT came to us. We have a piece of property that's located right along the Berlin Turnpike, and there's a DOT.
I'm sorry, could you speak up a little?
Sure, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
And DOT wants to install some traffic control device for which they need power. The line that they're proposing is an underground line that runs right along. It's almost part of it's along the within the state highway line. Part of it's within property that we own, but they need to get access to an electrical power pole that's on our property. It's not going to affect our use. In fact, it's in the front yard setback line, so it's not an area of the property that we can use anyway. They've done an appraisal. You see the price there that they're offering. The value is about $200-some-odd. They're rounding up to $500. It's consistent with the value of such similar easements that we've extended to others in the past, whether they be private entities or public entities like DOT. And so staff, in its effort to constructive effort to cooperate with another government agency, is suggesting that urging the commission, this committee, to approve it, and then it will go on to the full board if you should. So,
okay, thank you. Are there any questions from any commissioners? There was a motion and it was seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Were you able to get hold of Scott, John?
Not yet.
I'm on, Commissioner.
Oh, okay. Number five, discussion, draft drought response plan.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So as you know, in a lot of discussions we had over the last couple of years, driven really by issues associated with Niagara bottling, we have committed last year to, as part of our update of our water supply plan, to we're required to, anyways, to review our drought plan and our drought triggers. So this is just an update. There's a lot of specific detail that's not included here on purpose because we haven't finalized those percentages and triggers yet. But we'll be, and then we will bring those back to the board, Water Bureau, before we submit to DPH. So I have Dave Banker, who's going to give our presentation on this. Dave, you there?
Yes, I'm here, and the slides are coming up right now. Thank you, John. So just for a quick overview, so there's no confusion, the state has its own drought standards that they may determine that, you know, at any point during the summertime, if there hasn't been rain in a long enough period, the soil exceeds this dryness, that, you know, groundwater levels are below a certain level and streams are below certain levels, that they can declare droughts within the state. So that's just for the state as an entirety, and they do it by counties. The district's drought contingency plan really is developed around our water supply, and, you know, determined by our reservoir levels, and it's for our own water utility based on our water supplies. So the state can declare a drought depending on the weather conditions, but our drought contingency plan and levels are based upon our water supply with our reservoirs. So without the, so the state of Connecticut came up with the requirements for developing water supply plans and drought contingency plans after a drought we had in 1981. So it went into effect. Our first water supply plan was 1985. And the levels or the requirements set within that drought plan are the stages that we have shown on the screen right now. So the first stage is an advisory stage. That's followed by a watch stage, a warning stage, and an emergency stage. So there are certain requirements that are set by the state of Connecticut regulations for each of those stages, and we'll talk about some of those along with our own suggested steps as we go through. And the whole basis is that, you know, as a drought goes on and as the water supplies decrease, we want to ideally make the water supply last longer. So there's actions that will be taken to decrease the water demand and to prolong supply. And it's a component of the water supply plan update that we've been doing, and it'll be, and this go round's a little different. In the past, we've always, we developed it in-house. This round, we worked with Malone and McBroom, which has also worked with the state of Connecticut on, you know, several other efforts, including the state water plan, as well as the, statewide WOC coordination plan, coordinated water supply plans. So next slide, please. So in order to not be redundant, I didn't want to say these repeatedly in every stage, but as we move from the advisory stage to watch, to a warning, to an emergency, there's communications that will happen. So there's always a communication to DPH. There would always be a communication to the MDC commissioners in towns. And there'll also be communications that go out to all the customers, you know, via our normal, you know, methods of reaching them, which would be press releases, e-blast, notices on our website, bill inserts as it goes along, as well as public service announcements. So also, as we go through each stage, our staff would be monitoring the amount of water we're taking from each reservoir. We want to try to balance that so we don't draw down one reservoir more than another. And we will be taking steps to reduce our own internal water use, such as with hydrant flushing. We'd been increasing the amount that we leak detect our system, trying to find any water that we're losing through the pipes. And also we may put off some maintenance work if they're reconditioning basins in West Hartford filters or other work that may use a lot of water, if we can, you know, put off that maintenance work. And also we'd be putting an eye to managing our emergency water supplies, to make sure that they're ready in the event that we get down to deplete our reservoirs. So next slide. So that first stage that we hit, the drought advisory. So since we developed our drought contingency plan back in the mid 80s, we've only hit the drought advisory level. We haven't gone below that to the warning or emergency or watch stages. This is the first stage that you hit. There's so the state regulations mandate that there is a 10% reduction goal of voluntary conservation for the customers. So we put out a message to our customers to try to reduce their demand if they can, by 10%. As it says here, it's voluntary. We provide the customers with tips on how to try to conserve that water. For our largest top 50 users, we'd be contacting them to try to have them put together a plan for how they're going to try to reduce their specific demands. I've got something else coming up on the screen. John, is that you, Myrtle?
John, can you, the next slide?
Yep, working on it.
Okay, thank you.
So while he's working on that, one of the other items that we would begin a conversation with the board at that stage is if the drought continues on, we would want to get ahead of potentially setting up ordinances for water use restrictions, and also if there's going to be a need for a water use surcharge. So as people conserve more water and our demand goes down, we also won't be making the same revenue that which we needed to. So we may need to have a surcharge there. Or also the Bureau has discussed the potential for, you know, revoking that the economic development rates So that may be a point where we have that conversation at what stage within the, as the drought progresses, we may want to do that. We'd also want to discuss with the towns, if we do put an ordinance in place for restrictions of water use, it would be both the district and we'd want to work with our towns on that enforcement. So next slide, please. So after the advisory, the next stage is the drought watch. There we go. So at this point, the state mandates a 15% mandatory reduction goal for all of our customers. So that would be the communication to the customers would be. Also at this point, we would want to try to limit irrigation so that customers aren't doing it in the middle of the daytime, because that tends to be least effective. You end up with most of the water evaporating, going up into the air. And also we'd want to try to limit it as the drought progresses to 2 days per week to try to reduce the usage overall. We'd be putting an eye to putting the drought restriction requirement ordinances in place, and also then coordinating with the towns for enforcement. We'd be contacting our large users again to have them update their plans for a 15% reduction in usage. We'd be reviewing all the revenue status with the commissioners and once again to see if we needed to put anything in place for additional funds. And also we'd be also looking to contact some vendors to look at our emergency supplies and come up with plans if we do need to utilize those supplies. What pumps do we need to identify? What types of emergency piping connections do we need to identify so that we can get an idea and pricing and plans for how long of a lead time it is to get that infrastructure in place. At this stage also, we'd be looking to suspend recreation in Lake McDonough. That'd be since that's a potential emergency supply of ours. And also we'd begin discussing the downstream releases on the Farmington River with the downstream stakeholders. So those towns, the state, and DEEP for flows along the Farmington River. Next slide, please. So that then progresses to the drought emergency stage if there hasn't been a change in weather and if the reservoir levels continue to decrease. Let's see. Did we skip the... Go back one slide, please. Oh, there you go. Drought warning. So at the drought warning stage, it's a 20% mandatory reduction goal. At this stage, we're looking... We actually end up banning the outdoor use of irrigation water, recreational uses, pool filling, that type of stuff. We'll be further coordinating the enforcement of drought ordinances with the towns in our service area. We'd be going back to our large users, looking for plans for a 20% reduction in their water usage compared to the same time of year in a normal season. And then we'd be reviewing revenue, discussing potential surcharges. We also may be looking for emergency funding to be put in place by the Bureau and the Board of Commissioners if we need to start lining up that emergency infrastructure, or at least to make sure the funds are there to pay for it. And then as we progress further down, we'd be looking to potentially install taps and other portions of the infrastructure for usage. We'd also still be monitoring and discussing the flows on the West Branch of the Farmington River and seeing if we needed to adjust. And the last stage is the drought emergency stage. So at this point, it's a 25% mandated reduction in customer usage, which is across all customers of all sizes. We continue that ban on the irrigation and non-essential water uses. We'd still be coordinating enforcement with the towns and updating those large users to have a 25% reduction with their plans. We'd be still reviewing the revenue status with the commissioners. We'd also be looking to activate that emergency infrastructure for our emergency sources. And then we'd be further discussing downstream stakeholders, the flow in the Farmington River, and making provisions to make sure that we can deliver water to our critical customers. As this stage progresses further down with water supply, then there could also be discussion with the governor's office, and it wouldn't be the district, issuing these orders, but it would have to come from the governor's office if they want to cease any large commercial industrial customers, non-essential, what they might determine to be non-essential businesses in order to preserve water supplies. So And then once the drought would turn around and once the reservoirs begin refilling, we want to make sure that we don't come out of each stage too quickly and then tell customers that, you know, this stage of drought's over, you can irrigate, and then, you know, have it be a week later, it goes down below. So as the reservoirs refill, you wait for 30 days until you get above your certain, you know, reservoir levels mandated by the plan before you tell the customers that we're no longer in warning, or we're no longer in emergency, we're in warning, we're no longer in the warning stage, we're in the watch stage, so you can now irrigate your lawns or that type of communication. So we just want to avoid confusing customers by bouncing back and forth between drought stages and over communicating. So we want to wait until the reservoirs pick up above those levels. So that's all I had.
Thank you very much. When are you going to have the final document or plan?
So had several. Yep, you can go ahead, Scott.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, we need to submit this document to the state in February, and we're still working through some very important details. Let me just clarify what those are. So the levels, the percentage of the reduction goal is dictated by the state, but the water utility dictates, or at least presents in their plan, at what percentage of volume for each of these categories do you hit that 15%. So here's the challenge the MDC has, is the MDC is clearly different, and as I've mentioned numerous times, and as recently as last week, you heard there's a press release from the governor's office that the drought is over. And the drought is over in January of 2021, and the MDC's reservoirs are almost full. And in 2016, in August, the DPH was in the governor's office through the drought program was calling for people to reduce water consumption, and the MDC's reservoirs were at 95%. So what we have seen through history, and definitely in the 80s and in the 2000s, and as recently as 16 and this past year, what we have seen is that because our reservoirs are so large, that these drought triggers are really designed around the summer. They're designed around, the June, July, August, early September timeframe. And what we have seen is that when others are hitting their first drought triggers, forget about the percentages of volume, because everybody's volume is different, and everybody's volume reacts differently because of the size and the depth of their reservoirs or whether they're wells. But our reservoirs have shown through practical means that we're not seeing our drought trigger, which initially the first one was 75%. We're not seeing hitting that drought trigger until the late October, November timeframe. So let's look at it that way. If that's practical, and that was our initial 75% was our initial trigger, if you're asking people to voluntarily reduce consumption, well, if we look at what we're actually using in the August timeframe, and let's pick a number, 60 MGD versus mid to late October, which is 40-something MGD, we've already reduced the percent. We probably exceeded the 10% reduction through normal means because of the time of year that we actually see the reduction. So what we're trying to do is to balance that, and here's the reason why. We have one of our biggest criticisms with Niagara. One of the biggest criticisms with Niagara was we're asking our residential customers to conserve, and we're not asking our big users to conserve. So as you saw in the presentation, we've changed that. The question is, the balance is, if we're not seeing getting at to the 75%, even in the summertime, even in late October, November, why would we want to put and utilize the same 75% that we have in the past and ask for everyone to reduce by 10%, including a business which is in employing people, when we don't see that in the midsummer timeframe. So we're trying to balance those issues with our consultant. We're also looking at the hydraulic capacity of the pipes. So for example, when the reservoir is at 75% or 65 or 55 or 45 or 25, we want to know what the hydraulic capacity of the pipes are to actually get the water to the plant. We need to measure and we need to analyze those different values. So we're going through that exercise, and hopefully we will be done in time. We obviously have to be done in time for the February timeframe to submit. We will bring this to the board. That information is public. How we get there and how we transmit water and how we mechanically move water from one reservoir to another is not. It's not FOIable. It is protected. But the actual drought triggers of what percentage and what volume, it is public. So we will provide that information to not only to the board, but to the public before we submit it to the state.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Any commissioners have any questions of staff?
Yeah, I do. I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you. So in looking at that, the question of the drought reduction, and you talk about irrigation restriction. When you say irrigation restriction, what is the meaning of irrigation? Does that apply equally to like homeowners' lawn and this, as it would to commercial agriculture? Actually, I have two questions, so I might as well, yep. I might as well get them to you at the same time.
Yep.
So that's one part of the question. The second, do we look at methods? Like you were saying, was it Dennis or Mr. Banker? What?
David.
David. I'm sorry, David. You were saying that, you know, during the summer when you irrigate, a lot of it goes up into the atmosphere and just evaporates. Well, that's true if you use like a spray. But if you use a drip method of irrigation, that's it. You have entirely different results. So, you know, probably 90% of the water actually gets to the plants if you use a drip method. You know, the hose with like holes in it, which allows the water to come out very slowly and goes into the soil, so it goes to the plants. So are there distinctions? I'm asking the first question is, are there distinctions between commercial agriculture, such as the tree farms and or vegetable farms, tobacco? Mm-hmm. And secondly, is there a distinction between the methods of irrigation that are used? And I guess that would apply to all the different percentages because all of them have some something to do with your lessening of irrigation.
Yep. So let me just jump in there, Scott. So it does treat the like commercial agriculture, or also even the more broad example I'll give you, even though it's less used these days, is a golf course. So there may be a golf course that may use district water as a supplement for their irrigation to help fill their ponds during dry periods or even throughout the entire summer. So that is treated, you know, those instances where the water is used directly for those, you know, commercial processes of either, you know, growing plants or otherwise, is treated differently. Now that being said, if they're, you know, large users, and you know, we still will have discussions with them as a drought proceeds to make sure that the water is being used wisely and that, you know, we're still able to maintain our water supply for those reasons. But the irrigation that's targeted are the ones that will tend to be able to, you know, lawns, sports fields will actually go dormant during periods of prolonged drought, and then you can bring them back, you know, with watering or with natural rainfall later on. So that is the target for those irrigation uses. And then another similar comparison I'll give you is a car wash. So an actual car wash facility versus people washing their car, you know, are treated differently because the car wash facilities have water recycling systems so that they're not just, you know, continually using the water, spraying it, and it goes down the drain and comes to our wastewater plant. So since those facilities have those, you know, those reuses built in, then they're treated differently than, you know, the normal customer that's washing their car in their driveway, because, you know, all of that water goes down their driveway to the drain or to the, you know, to the soil, while the car wash facility reuses 90 or 95% of the water.
Interesting. I think it's a very wise approach that you've just described, essentially individualizing the way we impose restrictions. I think it's very good. Thank you.
Ray? Any other commissioners with questions?
Ray?
Yes, Commissioner Yano here.
Yes, Commissioner.
Okay, can you explain to me, please, what the surcharge, how that works? Are we actually going to raise the water rates during a drought reduction?
So there's the question of either of the economic development rate, which is something that was discussed when that was passed. So there's a potential to turn that off during the period of the drought. And also, yes, there could be a surcharge, and, you know, that would be something that would be up to the Water Bureau and the commission to consider in order to try to recover any funds that aren't made up for due to a reduction in water usage. So that could either be a flat rate, or it'd have to be discussed further with, you know, the district clerk if you wanted to target that over a certain amount, you know, certain consumption. So.
And because that sounds to me like it'd be harmful to the consumer, because if you're going to raise our rates, we use less water. That kind of just doesn't make any sense. And a lot of us are gardening now, and are at home. We're not just watering our lawns. We're actually growing food.
Commissioner, this is Scott Jellison. I'd just like to make a point. So as you can imagine, as Dave was mentioning, the MDC sets a budget, and we budget is the water rates based on an assumption of how much consumption we're going to sell, right? So if we're in a drought circumstance and we're mandated by the state to reduce consumption by X, whatever X is, that means that we're not going to receive those revenues that we expected. So the money has to come from somewhere. And the board may choose to not raise the rates. The board may decide that we have reserves that we would use. The board may decide that we need to raise the rates. It would be up to the board to decide this. But just to be clear, the private water utilities, and I don't pretend to know what the public act is, but it's I believe it was 680 or 860. It's a decoupling public act. And PURA has authorized the private water utilities for the same exact reason. If in fact there is a drought, and if in fact they have to mandate reduction in conservation because of orders from DPH and or the governor, they are allowed to go back and recoup those losses. So this really is no different than what the private utilities already have authorized through the state legislature and through PURA. But that would be the board's decision, and this is the point. We need to have a water drought trigger plan that is realistic. And we just got done talking about sprinkler systems. There's no sense in having a drought trigger when we have experienced, we have practical 40 years experience of hitting 75% or close to it in the October-November timeframe, and the residential sprinkler consumption average is about 2 million gallons a day. So if we're in October and November when we hit that first drought trigger, it doesn't mean anything, because there's no sense in cutting water conservation measures with irrigation in October. No one's sprinkling that long in October. So we want to make sure this is practical, and that our first trigger is we're using our 40 years of experience of when we think we will actually hit the first drought trigger.
I mean, I know we've been pretty lucky so far with that, with the drought. You know, I mean, it hasn't been, I mean, I don't water my lawn. I just water my food during a drought.
Yeah. And your point, and we've committed to this, is that we need to be fair. We don't want to be alarmist, but we want to be fair to our residential customers as well as our large users. But to the point Commissioner LeBeau made, you know, we talk about Niagara, but there's also other industries like tobacco, which also uses a lot of water. And so what's, you know, we're going to apply this evenly and fairly across, you know, all of our industries. And it's going to have to, obviously there is a significant difference between a residential or recreational sprinkling of baseball fields or lawns versus commercial business, but they all will be treated equally within this plan.
Are there any other questions from commissioners?
Yeah, Ray?
Yes.
Yeah. This is Al Taylor.
Yes, Al.
I guess my question is with regard to Niagara. I guess that's my concern here, that that we be very thoughtful and very careful. I'm thinking about two aspects. One, there's the cosmetics in terms of the public. Anything that we do with regard to Niagara, there is a great deal of suspicion out there. So I think that we need to make sure that we are as transparent as we possibly can be, so that nobody can start running around and claiming that, you know, the fix was in or whatever they want to call it or characterize it. The other thing is that, are we going to be buying ourselves a lawsuit if Niagara decides in a drought situation it's going to challenge our cutting back on their access to water? Because I do know that there have been situations in other jurisdictions where, under drought circumstances, private companies have sued and have sued successfully in some instances with regard to an effort to cut down their water consumption in drought circumstances. So I would want us to be thoughtful and careful, not to be afraid, but just make sure that we've covered this thing so that we just don't get ourselves tied in a knot.
If I might, Mr. Okay. Chairman.
Yes.
Chairman Chris Stone, just very briefly, in those situations where there's been a lawsuit, a successful lawsuit, in the event there's a mandatory reduction in water consumption by a commercial entity, I believe those are where there's an actual contract or agreement between the water company and a commercial entity. In this case, we don't have such a thing with Niagara. It's kind of a misnomer to, and we've heard it before from Save Our Water. We're talking about our quote-unquote agreement with Niagara. We don't have one. We have a rate structure that Niagara can take it take use of, as can every other customer if they use enough water. So. A mandated reduction, a voluntary reduction can be requested, a mandated reduction can be imposed.
Okay, thank you. Any other commissioners? Okay, thank you. We'll go to item 6, Colebrook River Lake Dam. Scott?
Scott, you might be on mute.
You there still?
Sorry. I was on mute.
Yeah,
I apologize.
Colebrook, yes. River Lake Dam.
Yes, there's really not much to update. We're just keeping this on the agenda so it reminds the board that we have reached out to the Army Corps looking for some feedback from our latest letters. We have not received any yet. I do know, because as Jason Waterbury mentioned in the last meeting, we did have a conference call with EPA, and the EPA and the federal government, the state government, they're all working from home. I'm assuming that has slowed down the bureaucracy, and so we're just waiting to get a response from our latest letter.
Okay, thank you. Any commissioners have any questions on that, or they are all fine? Okay, number 7, water main replacement costs.
Commissioner, again, I left this on only because we did a presentation last meeting, and I know that Commissioner Payne is passionate about this issue, as we are, and I just wanted to make sure we had cut short the presentation. I just want to make sure that I've answered all of his questions, and if not, we're more than willing to bring back and any answers to any questions he might have that he wants to review further. So I just kind of left that there for any concerns Commissioner Payne has had or has.
Commissioner Payne, you on?
I am on.
Okay.
I appreciate you leaving it on the agenda. I've reviewed everything, and you've done an excellent job with engineering, and I have no further questions.
Thank you.
Okay,
and
we
are, and this is important because I know Commissioner Payne is has very good intentions about this, and we are trying to balance. We just agreed with Hartford to do some stormwater work to void some payments due to the city for easements associated with the treatment plant. So we are trying to utilize our staff the best we can, as efficient as we can, when it's the right timing. We've got great staff, and but we have, as you know, we've got a lot of work that needs to get done. We thank him for his support.
Okay. Opportunity for general public comments. Commissioner comments and questions. Do any commissioners have anything?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Payne. I have a question.
Yes, Dominic.
There was a motion made some time ago about the Berlin water. I was wondering if I could get an update on that.
Christo?
I had to get off the mute. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
No problem. The question was, in November, we talked about the Berlin water. We passed a motion that night made by Dominic to send it to the full board for the final payment of, I think, around $12,000, whatever it was.
That's more than
that. And he's asking for a response on what's going on.
Right. There was that motion that was followed by another motion to referred to the Board of Finance first. It has been referred to the Board of Finance, and correct me if I'm wrong, District Clerk, it's on the Board of Finance agenda for its meeting of next week, and it will be, I assume that the Chairman will want that on the agenda for the February 8th Board meeting, but I won't speak for the Chairman.
Okay, so you also made a $270,000 payment or whatever it was?
We made a payment of monies that we consider to be legally our legal obligation to pay, which carried us from 2010 to present. So as to any amounts that are within what I consider to be what we consider to be our legal obligation have been paid in full, we're only talking about anything that predates 2010.
So the only thing, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I believe the only thing outstanding then is the $35,000 that was referred to the Board of Finance, which would be taken up.
It's that much on the water side, is it?
I think that was a number.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I received an email from Ray Jaremma last week. Earlier this week. I had a conversation with him last week about the issue. He was fine-tuning. He didn't have the exact numbers. He was fine-tuning his numbers. Total amount that he's claiming is due is somewhere in the 90-some-odd thousand. I didn't have the exact number here. Hold on.
That's water and public works, though, right? We're talking about water in this
resolution. No, I understand. No, I understand you're talking about water, but you're right. This is the whole amount due, which would be water, sewer, and the Deming Road pump station. And the total was, I'm sorry, I misspoke, $116,624.07 is what he wants on the total. On the water, Commissioner, it's $23,012.55.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Right. And he's asking for 40% of what the total, what they believe the total back bill was, correct? It's 40%.
If the 40% on the capital cost, the two other usage costs, water 23,000, sewer 11,000, the total ask is 116,624.07.
Which is 40% of the total amount, correct?
Well, no, I'm sorry, Ray. It's 40% was applied only to the Deming Road pump station.
Okay.
And that was 82,606.18.
10% on the rest, isn't it?
The others were what he considers to be the full amount paid.
What I had recommended is we look at paying 10% on the dollar.
Yep.
And, you know, so you're saying it's on the next finance committee meeting?
It is.
I'd like to make sure, John, could you make sure I get the, so I can get on it?
Yeah, that'll be for next Wednesday's agenda, which we'll get on Friday.
Okay, thank you very much. There any other questions, Dominic? Did you have any more?
Mr. Chairman, did this a similar problem happen with Matt Abbasit, Chris Stone? Since we weren't working with a contract, did we have a similar problem with the Matt Abbasit? Did we owe them any money?
No, they billed us. They billed us, and we paid.
Thank you very much.
Any other commissioners have any questions or comments?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Just briefly, I said this at the Public Works meeting that John Avedisian is presently in the hospital, Hartford Hospital, and being treated for COVID. And I talked to him about almost a week ago, and I haven't been able to get back to him. So anybody of you, say a prayer for him. He's being treated in Hartford Hospital. And the conversation I have with him, he didn't sound very, very well. So I'll try to get in touch with him this week, but it's his cell phone, and I don't believe they allow him to use it. How John got a hold of him? He called me on his cell phone. I don't know how he did that, but they aren't allowing anybody to inquire even relative to litter in the hospital.
Could I make a comment?
Yes.
I went to school with his wife, Amy. I've known her since I was probably 6 years old. So I will call Amy. I had no idea until just this minute. So I'll call Amy and express concern and sympathies and so forth.
Yeah. Would you talk to me, Amy, before you do?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Give me a call.
Yeah.
Scott, I have one other thing. On the next agenda, we've talked about recreational charges.
Yes, we actually have a plan, Commissioner. We have a plan
to
bring
that before March.
Yes, we're actually planning to bring you a whole agenda on recreation, which will not just include recreational charges, but we want to talk about the concept of passive recreation. For example, we talked about the issue at the boathouse and making sure that we can issue permits and we can utilize technology to open the gates for people at the boathouse, so we don't have to physically have people there collecting money, things like that. So we're going to bring a whole presentation to you before March.
Yeah, before, you know, they want to start using the facilities. And then
correct.
One other thing.
Chairman Sweezy,
agenda, I'd like to see, as far as water bills, what percent are making payments? There's an article in yesterday's paper where California households owe over $1 billion in water bills. And I want to know our collections, at what percent they are and everything. So if you could give us a short report on that, collections for water.
Chairman Sweezy, this is John Myrtle and Scott. We had Scott and I actually met recently to talk about a schedule. The next Water Bureau regular meeting is March 10th. And at that meeting, we were planning to have the recreation issues that Scott was just discussing. So At this point, the plan was for March 10th at the regular meeting. If you want it prior to that, we would need to schedule a special meeting in February.
No, that's fine. The February meeting is fine. I mean, the March.
Okay.
March meeting, perfect. Plus, can we also have a update on collections?
Yes, we will do that. Yes, absolutely. And I would say, I don't know if my finance staff is on, but as of a month or so ago, we were down about $700,000 in collections on as it's related to the COVID. Kelly or Chris, are you on?
I'd like to know, as this article say, the survey shows with Black and Latino neighborhoods are more likely to be in the area, owing us money. I want to know the same thing. Is it sections of Hartford or, sure. What towns this collection, it's owed to us, where it's owed to us. And
you got it. No
how
problem.
We can help resolve this.
Absolutely.
They do have a problem.
This is Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
We are still about above 90% collection. We're still doing pretty well, but we can pull some reports and get some very specific information like that, Commissioner Sweezy, for the next meeting.
Thank you very much. Any other statements from any commissioners? Questions? Okay, can we have a motion for adjournment?
So moved, Mr.
Okay, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you. Good night.